హరిః ఓం సహనవవతు సహనౌ భునక్తు సహవీర్యం కరవావహై తేజస్వినావధీతమస్తు మా విద్విషావహై. శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి. ఓం జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గజానన శివ సది గౌర భక్తవృంద. హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే. హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే.
సో పేజ్ 45. There's no comparison between bhakti and pious activities, as explained in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Madhya 23:54. The Lord said, "Don't think you become powerful by performing austerities, though for certain that devotion to Lord Vishnu is the highest goal." So it's like you perform the austerities, it's not that because you perform the austerities you become powerful. Mm. It's that the Lord is pleased with what you do. In other words, if you're following his rules, he'll be pleased, right? But if you express devotion to Lord Vishnu, then that's where he's actually the most pleased. Because the one is, he'll be pleased and you'll get a good material result. Mm. If he's really pleased, then you'll get his transcendental result. Yes.
And then we have these Mayavadis who are doing devotional service because they know it gets good results.
Yeah, I guess like that. They know that, for some of them they understand that this nice karma through bhakti is your quickest path. So the thing is, they'll be more successful because they are surrendered to the Lord.
So when Krishna sees this activity, how is his mood exactly? Because, I mean, it's not really real devotion.
No, it's not real devotion, but they're turning to the Lord for the purpose of liberation.
Yeah.
You know, because what one always has to understand is that any of these situations that may be there are always temporary. So even if they go to the Brahman, they'll be back.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, you know, and if you're looking at it, for us it's a long time. Like Brahma's lifetime is a long time, right? But in actuality it's only 3/4 of a second. That's how long it lasts. You know, and then that's breathing out and breathing in. Right? And then you have to wait for so it's not long. So it's just a matter of, you know, some time and then they're back again and then you continue.
And is there this tendency, if you've been to the liberated platform and come back, that you will...
Once going there, you always come back again.
Well, yeah, but then you will be more... you will be better positioned to actually make it to the transcendental platform.
Maybe, maybe not. Because the point is that on that liberated platform, it means when you come back from there, that there's no technically any impurities arising from secondary weakness of heart. Means there's no specifics of attachment that are there, but the desire to control and enjoy remains, so the primary weakness of heart is still there. So that means then, you know, it's just a matter of it'll just follow the modes again, because everybody came in as Lord Brahma. So it means you started off in the best possible position, then here we are.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it just works that way.
Yeah.
No, I mean it's not. But you have that Bhukti Mukti Siddhi. No, that's another one. That means Sakra Shanta. There's another one where he's saying it's whether you. Oh, that's Siddhi Kami, Sarva Kami. This one where it's Bhagavatam verse where it's saying whether you. Okay. Means whether you are interested in the material facility or you're interested in liberation, pious activities, it doesn't matter. If you turn to the Lord, then that's the most direct method.
But when you get to liberated platform through devotional service,
but it's not actually devotional service. You're just approaching the Lord, because they don't see that the Lord, that relationship is eternal, so it can't be devotional.
I meant you develop bhava, and that's the liberation.
No, you don't develop bhava. They don't get the bhava.
If you're a devotee, I'm saying.
You're a devotee, yes, but it's two different things.
You go back to Gokula, right? You go there, and there is no way to go.
It means generally you wouldn't make the wrong choice and that you would come back to here. Generally when we talk about someone who's falling from the Uttama platform means that they're still within this body when they've gotten to it. You know what I'm saying? So that you could take that. You're like Bharat Maharaj. So he's still within this body. And he's come to the Uttama platform, so then you could fall from there. But we see as far as his realization it was there, it's just a mistake was made, and then there is a result from that mistake. But then we see that in Gokul, once one's attained that transcendental position, that one will, generally speaking, progress forward. That would be the natural state. But still, warning is given because one can still get distracted by the facilities and be slow. That's why, you know, when the Rasa dance started, then some gopis went, some didn't. So those who were distracted didn't go, right? Those who weren't, went. But those ones who were distracted, then they become focused on Krishna. So either you know, sometime later then, or next time there was the Rasa dance, then they went. You know what I'm saying? So it's progressive, though something got in the way, like that. They weren't careful enough. But there is also warning Haridas Thakur gives that if one maintains the principle, I am a senior devotee or I am advanced, then that can keep you on that platform of bhava for hundreds of lifetimes. So it just means you just get stuck. Does that make sense? But it doesn't mention about coming back to this platform. You know what I'm saying? But technically you could, because you're back at that situation. But the general thing is because if you've gone through devotional service, right, you're serving the Lord, and so you want to develop, you know, this pure on the mind devotion to the Lord, so that will always be there. You know, so it's generally just a matter of working out any of the bugs, you know, that are there. Does that make sense? But the normal thing is in that one appearance in the Boma Lila, then you will come to the platform of Prema, right, and then go to Goloka. That's the standard. But the point is it can be otherwise, right? So not necessarily that it happens or it happens much. But still the warning is there so that it's quicker. Like that. Excuse me.
Yeah. you're not. You might need this information sooner than you think. Yeah. We're actually almost done. Sometime in February we will be doing one word a day.
Maybe one other.
Yeah.
The rest book, yeah, and the plus. I was yesterday, but the shop was
closed. Oh.
Does that make sense? But the Mayavadis who use the devotional process to get to the liberated platform, there's no question that there's anything beyond Bhakti, beyond the liberated platform. So they'll always come back. Does that make sense? But for the devotee, the liberated platform isn't the point. It's the devotional service. So they come to the liberated. That's why we make a distinction between Mukti and Brahma-Bhuta. So the devotee comes to the platform of Brahma-Bhuta, right? So he'll continue to prema, while the Mayavadi will come to the position of Mukti. But then from Mukti you'll come back. That's why it's not called the full form of liberation. So technically we don't even count it as liberation for us. So for us, Sayuja is not actually a liberation. You know, because it's temporary. So if you're talking about eternal, something that's temporary doesn't quite add up, you know. So if we say liberation is eternal, so only being situated in your relationship with the Lord is eternal. Does that make sense? So there's a few, very few, who use it like that. They may recommend it to the common people. That's one of their main recommendations. But for those who actually practice it as a sadhana, there are very few do that.
What about the statement that those who are dying in the dump, if they have lost lifetime, even if they are sinful, what's their position?
Because the point is they come to the last lifetime is what?
Since
their last life. So then from there, then I guess they would go to Gokul and then continue. So they were devotees. Just, you know, there was something distracting them, so they took up a position in the Dham that more matched their distraction. You know. Is that make sense? So like that. So then after that, then they'll go back to that position.
Regarding the goal for the police, we didn't go to the residence to distract it. I heard that there was a point that those who didn't go, they became so absorbed after that, so they left their bodies. And I heard that they became much more elevated at that point. So they.
No, but left the bodies meant left that mental body or that kind of thing. That, I think, maybe mixing two different pastimes. There's the one of where, when Krishna left Vrindavan, then there's some gopis that left the body in separation. No, that I know of, no one left the body, because there is that opinion that's brought up, but Vishwanath mentioned that since it's a nice night, the Rasa dance is a great night, right? So therefore something is, you know, inauspicious as a devotee leaving their body wouldn't have happened on that night. If you read, go into the 10th canto and read that particular, you know, purport, because there then Gopi Puranadam Vidyanandamars, it was just so, you know, how do you say, quintessential and clear that they didn't summarize it. It's just there in full. So it's a many page purport. So you can read there. And then he deals with that at one point. Is that some will say they left. But the point is here leaving means they gave up that distraction of, you know, being absorbed in the household duties and that kind of thing. Because after that, then the family just considered they went crazy, and so therefore then everyone kind of left them alone, you know. And so then when the Rasa dance comes out, easy enough to get out, you know, because nobody cares anyway. But it's said that they burned up the reactions to all their pious and impious activities. So that doesn't mean that there's going to be a form of it. It means that there's the mentality. It brought them to the point they're no longer tatasta, you know, meaning as a situation. It means they're always jivas, but they're not situated in the tatasta position between prema, you know, and or love, you know, attraction to Krishna, and being distracted by the Lord's energy. But here's now they're fully focused on Krishna. So that means that form is gone. Does that make sense? Because as it goes up, it gets more and more subtle. You know, so confusions come, or when we try to apply the perception of here or there, does that make sense? Or a lower perception to a higher, or these. Well, that's what we were discussing this morning. Is that to be able to see what is the essence, and you know what is its actually purpose in being presented. You know, it's just like Prabhupada was talking about making a point. There's so many side points you can make, but he wasn't, and they were obvious that they could be made. So it wasn't just, but he wasn't making them because there was one point he was trying to establish. You know, and so in talking about those side points, it wouldn't get done. But in other places, then those other points would be brought up because it's a list of, what was it, so many verses. You know, one right after another. So, in each one, you're bringing out some point. Does that make sense? Otherwise, from any of them, you could bring out the same points. Does that make sense? Yes. So like that. Then it's not a matter of that they attained a higher position, because now they've actually come to the point of Purvarag. So that means samadhi is complete. So the Shravana Dasa is complete. Then you can move to Apandas. That means that because in Apandas you can be involved in the pastime. You know what I'm saying? You're in Vrindavan, so it's ultimately all the Lord's pastime. But by directly interacting, that comes at Apandas. Does that make sense? So then they move into that. And when that becomes established, then they move to Sampati Dasa, which means, and then you inherit, it means that the position is inherited. You know, meaning that now it's yours, because up to that point you haven't quite accepted it yet. Does that make sense?
You know, that's how it goes in Gokul as well?
Is that how it goes in Gokul?
This revisions of being just the observer, then take part, and then.
That's where it's happening.
And in Goloka?
No, everybody's on the platform prema, so there's no question of that. It means Goloka is for those who have already come to prema. You understand? But the point is being situated in Goloka. But there's no difference between Goloka and Gokul. They're the same place, just differently situated. Right? So in this higher situation, only those on prema are there. And in the lower situation, then those with prema come down, you know, to see that everything goes properly, you know, the pastime goes wrong. But those who are coming up from the material world, then they get the opportunity to get that association and come to prema. Right? So then there's all those different groups. The sages of Naimisharanya, they were one group of gopis. The daughters of the demigods, they were another group of devotees. And then individuals like this. So whatever, there were so many classes of those who had come to the level of gopis. Like that. Does that make sense? So they're coming from so many different kinds of backgrounds. But the process is still the same.
Mayavadis and Brahmavadis, they are same or different?
Means they're both impersonalists, but Mayavadis say that this world is illusion. Brahmavadis will say everything's Brahman. So this is all here, but it's Brahman. So they're not worried about anything outside of Brahman. So it doesn't have any value other than its Brahmanness. So that's why they don't get involved in the world. The Mayavadis just say it's not actually here. This is all illusion. But if everything's Brahman, then the illusion would also be Brahman. Right? So for so much intelligence, they're not even very good at their own philosophy. Right? But that's the
sportive nature.
Huh?
Sportive nature of Krishna.
Yeah, like that. But it's also just Lord Shiva's expertise that he can come in and bewilder all these atheists. You know?
So what do Brahmavadis do?
What do Brahmavadis do?
They take part in this world like Mayavadis. The Brahmavadis, they think that they are already in the Brahman. There is no illusion. They are already in the Brahman.
No, means everything's already Brahman. So whatever's here, it exists, but it's all Brahman. So it doesn't. It's just varieties of Brahman.
So they are engaged in sense enjoyment, or what do they do? Like, what? Or they renounce everything? They are engaged in.
Okay, we'll give you an example of two persons who are on the Brahman platform: Sukadeva Goswami and the Four Kumaras. Does that make sense? So from that you can answer, what does a Brahmavadi do? Those are Brahmavadis. Right, the Grihasthas you meet in Calcutta and Bombay and that, to talk about Brahman, those are called Mayavadis. But they don't seem to mind the Maya. Doesn't make any sense. If everything's Brahman, there's no illusion. It's just Brahman. But the Mayavadis, there's Brahman, and then that becomes covered by illusion. And so what you see here isn't actually here, and you're seeing isn't actually happening, and you're not actually happening. It's all Brahman. You know, so this is illusion, so therefore. But the Brahmavadi is all this different things that are here are Brahman. And so they're only worried about the quality of Brahman. They're not worried about anything else.
So they are devotees?
No. No, Brahmavadis.
Yeah, they are devotees.
No, they're Brahmavadis. Devotees are another thing.
Like Sukadeva Goswami.
They became devotees.
Oh, so earlier you were talking, before becoming devotees.
Because you said Brahmavadis, so we talk about before devotees. Because when they're devotees, you don't call them Brahmavadis, you call them devotees.
I thought Brahmavadi is one class of maybe devotees there.
No. Brahmavadi means all they know is Brahman. They don't know Paramatma or Bhagavan, so that's why they don't. But because they understand everything's Brahman, they don't have a problem when they come in contact with Paramatma and Bhagavan. Well, the Mayavadi will just say even that's illusion. So for that's where the Mayavadis, everything's Maya. If you can speak about it, perceive it with your senses, talk about it, it's all Maya. So that means their existence and their talking is also Maya. So why they consider themselves and, you know, are happy to be worshipped by other illusory elements. Their illusion is worshipped by someone else's illusion. They seem to be quite happy with that. You know what I'm saying? So that's why we say the Mayavadis are the biggest offenders, because they're just totally bogus. Yeah. So you could say the only thing absolute about Mayavadis is
the
bogus.
The bogusness.
Yeah.
So Sukadeva Goswami, he didn't want to come out of the womb for 16 years. And then when he did, he took off because he didn't want to get contaminated. That was him manifesting his brother by the cosmos.
That's, you could say. But the point is you know, why we're saying is because the four Kumaras and Sukadeva Goswami, even though everything's Brahman and it's all one substance, they didn't bump into anything. You know what I'm saying? So that means they can tell the difference in the variety of Brahman, but it's all just Brahman.
So generally, the Mayavadis, they need to be smashed before they, like Vajracharya.
It means you'd have to defeat their philosophy,
yeah.
Because in their philosophy, it's atheistic.
Yeah.
A Brahmavadi is not an atheist. He is incomplete in his knowledge of the absolute.
So the Mayavadis,
they're just atheists.
They're attached to.
And they're attached to their atheism.
Yeah.
Because in their atheism, then they can be God.
Yeah.
But the point is the Brahmavadi, then everything is Brahman, so that means God's also God.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you're God. So it's not a problem.
But a Brahmavadi, he could, theoretically, he could, by his, not by his own endeavor, but without a devotee directly forcing him or pushing him.
No, it's by association. He's on the transcendental platform.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Mayavadi is not on the transcendental platform.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So the Mayavadi not being transcendentally situated is not actually liberated.
Yeah.
So he's working with his material concepts.
Mm-hmm.
The Brahmavadi is liberated, but just he doesn't know anything beyond liberation. So if he comes in contact with
him,
then he can tell the difference between the material and the transcendental.
Yeah.
So then they can understand that there is transcendental engagement of the senses and activities.
Mm.
So immediately that's more attractive than doing nothing.
Yeah.
Are there contemporary Brahmavadis? Yes. The Sukadeva Goswami and the four Kumaras are still around. So they're like that.
Ananda, he was classified as a Brahmavadi.
Moved to them. They'll classify themselves as that, but they're generally all Mayavadis. He was a Mayavadi. But then he took up, after hearing Vedanta Sutra explanation from Lord Chaitanya, then he became a devotee. You know, also. Swamis and Prakashananda. Yeah, Prakashananda Saraswati. They're also Mayavadis.
Do you know about Maharishi Mahesh Yogi? Because he's the teacher of my previous teacher.
Yeah, the thing is that there's always a mix. So they're dealing with the yoga, so they accept the Paramatma. But if you notice that the elements of Paramatma and his personalness and his powers and completeness is only described in the earlier chapters. But in the latter chapters, they don't talk about that. So ultimately, they're not worried that he's a person. They're just trying to come to the Brahman platform. So they merge into the Lord. So then there's going to be a problem. They have less anxiety about it than the, Mayavadis, but it's still not the platform is still not ideal, right? They still don't know enough. Because the point is the Brahmavad platform is only useful if one comes to the devotional platform, because otherwise it will be temporary. I mean, compared to us, it's a long time. Right? So he's just like, let us say you've been really having a bad day. I mean, a really bad day, or bad week, or bad, you know, whatever it is. And then you can just go away to a room that there's nothing in it, it's just bright light, and you can just, you know, sit in there, and no one will bother you, no one will talk to you, no phones, no Facebook, nothing, right? So, for some time, you'll think it's great, right? But how long will that be? Right, son? You know, a few minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, maybe 20 minutes. So, one universal manifestation is 3/4 of a second on that time frame. So then even you take 20 minutes divided by 3/4 of a second. Right? You know what I'm saying? And so then that's how many lifetimes the Brahma would be. So it may be, you know, you're in the Brahman situated for, you know, 30 lifetimes of Brahma. You know, so that means 311 trillion years times 30. So it's a lot of time, right? You know, you're in the quadrillions of years. But the problem is it was actually only 20 minutes on the Brahman platform, and by Brahman time. Does that make sense?
So would they feel disappointed?
Yeah, exactly.
No, they just get bored, and so then they'll think of activity, and the only activity they know is here, so they'll come back here. So that's why we don't recommend going to so much work like that when you could make the same endeavor and, you know, go back to Godhead. So that's why we don't recommend it.
And it seems that the difference is just lack of complete knowledge.
Lack of complete knowledge, that's the main thing. That's all anybody's not performing devotional service because of lack of complete knowledge. You know, because they think they're the body, or they think that they're the, you know, controller and enjoyer. You know, so it's all just lack of knowledge. That's why all this is discussed, because then one has proper knowledge and then one can function from there. Yes.
Maharaj, in regards to well-known religions such as Christianity and Muslims, because
what's that?
Oh, sorry, did I?
No. I'm just wondering, what are you talking about?
Oh, Christianity.
No, I'm saying, what's this Christianity?
Some exotic thing from the West.
You were saying well-known. But,
Sorry.
Just harassing.
I
think we've heard of it. Yeah.
I just wanted to ask you, Maharaj, that because they're not aware of the transcendental form, would it be fair to say that they are impersonalist?
Yeah, on one level they are. The difficulty with all these material philosophies and religions is basically they're all the same thing. It's just what you're emphasizing. You know, karma is prominent, jnana is prominent. And then whether there's a personal or impersonal, you know, like that. And then, you know, how much personal, supreme person or just great personalities, or, you know, yourself is a great person, you know, like that. So that's all that's there. So on one level, they're talking about the supreme Godhead. That's, you know, the term that we use, Godhead, it's actually a Christian term, which means that God which is the source of all others, right? Though they don't accept anything in between, but, you know,
what are you going to do?
Yeah, what to do. So the but because they don't understand, means the point that what we were reading this morning is he doesn't have any material senses or like this. So all these, he walks, he does not walk, all these different things are meaning that there's no material manifestation. Right? He's fully spiritual, so his form is spiritual. But there's a mix-up in the philosophy that he has no material qualities, so therefore he has no, you know, material form. But then they come to the conclusion, therefore he has no form. Yes. Right? So how they work it out that he has no form, no senses, and all that, but he's a supreme person. You know, how they sleep at night with that one, I'm not sure. But somehow or another, I guess the modes of nature, you know, they do okay. Does that make sense? So, yes, ultimately they're all, that's why we say, is ultimately they're all, it all comes down to the impersonal. You know? Even the karmi, ultimately it's impersonal because it's all just about him. You know, so it's personal in that it's about him, so he's a person. You know, so even the Maya body, it's all about himself. So there's that personal element. But it's just, it's not consistent. That's the problem with the material philosophies, is they're all inconsistent. It's just a matter of which there's more karma or more gyan, or you know, like that. So you'll get that. You'll get your theologians is more gyan, your regular priests and your layperson is more karma. Does that make sense? You know, different groups are. I think the what do you call it? Who's the guy who wanted to fly? Assisi Iwawa? Francis. So the Franciscans, then they're more on the you know, renunciation and all that kind of thing. You know, and like that. But then, you know, other groups are very much into, you know, doing good work and like this. So you just have all these different mixes like that. Just it's a wide range. You know, so it's a pretty, you know, in theory at least, the Catholic means it's broad. So it's supposed to be accommodating. Though if you get too far near the edge, then you know there is the. How you say excommunication if you're lucky, you know. Otherwise, then you know there's the stake, and, you know, some of the other things like that.
Yeah, I guess I also wanted to know that when we're out there presenting Krishna consciousness, and we come across with some of these like really strong Christians and Muslims, what we have to be mindful of, and also that like. If what you were just saying is then, would it be the right approach would be to introduce that concept of that we, because we are part and parcel of the Lord, and we have form, so the Lord or the absolute truth must have
a form. Yes, well. You can try, but more would be the thing of develop. Depends upon who you bump into. If it's a born again, don't even bother. You know, like that. But if it's anyone else, then generally you'll do a little better, because there's some element of intelligence that you're working with there. You know what I'm saying? Because the born again is simply just faith. You know, they come up to you and, have you found Jesus? And then you look at him and go, I didn't know he was lost, but you know, stuff like that. Yeah. But otherwise, you just deal with love of God. You know that we're servants of God. You know the things that we're soul, part and parcel of God. They won't have any problem with all that. Shouldn't. But you know, servant of God, following God's laws, developing love for God. Those kind of things. Those would be common ground that they will very much appreciate. You know, and then try to show how they can apply this in their life. You know, because a lot they'll be distracted generally by karma. You know, or you know, you have your theologians. You know, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, right? You know, but they don't define how big is the head of the pin, you know, or the size of an angel. So you know, it makes it very difficult to do the math, right? You know, so. You know, you point out is what is the weakness? It's not devotion. So therefore, does that make sense? Like that. And places where they have a problem with, you know, just avoid that in the beginning. You know.
Okay.
So, you know, pleasant discussions, plenty of prasad, like that. Because just the discussions, you know, it's like that's nice, but they have to do some service. So, I mean, they're hearing, but if they take prasad, then that's quite.
Yeah.
Dynamic. Well, I mean, do both. But if you can't do both, then at least take prasad. And so then slowly, slowly it'll be easier. Yeah.
One point in that regard about the personal, they do accept the personal, but that's their idea. There's three hypostases or three faces of one.
Well, yeah, well, they've come up with the three.
Two a person, but the other is not. And the question between all of them, like Orthodox and Catholic and others, is who are the primary and most considered the personal part, which is the.
But the same is, but you ask what does the person look like, and then it'll always become impersonal again. You know, so that's the difficulty, is that they haven't been able to digest the Upanishadic point of that. On the material platform, the Lord is Nirguna. he has no quality, so therefore there is no material form. But he is saguna, so he is full of qualities, so he has the form and activity. And even the Holy Ghost is still the saguna Brahman. So it's they don't really catch. In other words, a lot has been lost, you could say. But the main difficulty is they're trying to create something out of nothing. You know, basically. It means they have the New Testament, but it's the Old Testament which is actually the foundational literature. Because the one thing that they always forget, and, you know, how you say, much of the time exclusively work for forgetting, was Jesus was Jewish. He wasn't a Reformed Jew. You know, he was an Orthodox practicing rabbi. So they somehow or another missed that point. You know, the famous Last Supper, that was Passover. So they kind of miss these subtle points. So therefore, then they'll have something more to base what they're dealing with. And it won't be so speculative. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that you can't come up with completely stupid results.
Yeah, they voted him to be part of, but God himself came in the form to
be. Yeah, but then that's also your difference between your Catholic and your Orthodox and your Oriental. Is Jesus God or not? You know, so the Catholics, he's God, but for the others, he's not. You know, he's the representative. You know, like that. So that's the difficulty. They don't have enough foundation to be able to. Though they're trying to deal in these subtleties, they don't have enough foundation to base it on, so it just remains speculative. And there's no culture. Right? The Jewish is less speculative because there's a culture. Mm. Right? It means they have philosophy and religion. Mm. You know, but the Christian only has philosophy, no religion. So any religion they have has all been created. I mean, every last, basically, ritual. You know, I think they've probably been very careful to make sure that nothing is, no remnants are there from Judaism. But, you know, they're quite liberal on, you know, Catholic, meaning liberal, on picking up from the paganistic, like that, so.
That's kind of a marketing scheme.
Yeah. So it means, that's the thing, is by religion they're pagans, by philosophy they're monotheistic. You know what I'm saying? So it's about, you know, I guess in their opinion it's like if it comes down between a Karmi and a Mayavadi, take the Karmi, not the Mayavadi. So their thing, if it comes down between a pagan and a Jew, take the pagan. Yeah. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah, because the people that, you know, spoke the most strongest against the Jews were the Christians, not anyone else. You know, the pagans, it's just, you know, they didn't like them, they cleared them out, and if they, you know, okay, they left them alone, but they didn't have a philosophy about it, you know.
The Jews probably also had a stronger authority. I mean, the pagans weren't as authority accepting.
So
they would be easier to.
Yeah, because the element of faith, because you could generally always catch the pagans on faith. Mm. Yeah. Like that. So therefore, they had a stronger hold, because the monotheistic position will always be stronger than karma or gyan. Mm. You know, like that. So it's a strong position to be in. Problem is, it's just the lack of philosophy. Just makes it lack of philosophy, and, you know, specifically with the Christians, the lack of culture, like that. So there isn't any definition of culture for a Christian, because what culture was, the natural culture of Christianity, which was Judaism, is they had already rejected. Like that.
What about the Muslims? What about the Muslim culture? Did they create it or it's based on?
They would also be created. But, you know, because I don't think they take much from Judaism, because there would be a long distance, because that's just a few hundred years ago. And I think, what was it? I don't know, like 2000 BC? Or when?
8th century?
No, yeah, that's 8th century AD. So we're talking about B.C. is when they went out of Egypt, you know, through the Red Sea and into the Sinai. That was a few thousand B.C.
1,200.
It's only 500.
No,
2,500 or something B.C., right? So now, 10 tribes turned left in the Sinai. Two tribes, they're not quite sure what happened to them, you know, but they seem to have gone straight, and a couple of them might have even turned right, like that. So now, between 2,500 years and, you know, you're over 3,000 years, so it's like your Judaic rituals would kind of get lost. So then just, in other words, theirs is also based on the local pagan kind of things. But it would be a little closer on one way to the, you know, to the Vedic rather than just completely made up. You know, the degraded demigod worshippers from that were kicked out of the Vedic scene. Like that. You know, so it's all speculative. There isn't, basically speaking, other than the Hindu, there's no world religion that it's not speculative. Even Buddhism. But Buddhism means you live outside and you do your meditation, and for I think it's an hour and a half or something in the day you go begging, and the rest of the day you just study and discuss, and that's the total form. So this whole, what they have now is what's mixed with the Hindu tantric, like that. So all those rituals are actually coming out of the Hindu tantra, like that. You know, so like that. Basically, this is, there isn't anything that actually has an original form as such. The Judaic then is based on the old. So if they're Orthodox, they're a little more careful about it. You know, so there's more form there. There's more, you know, what is their food? What is their clothes? What is their behavior? What do they do? Like, you know, there's no rules in the others. You know. Does that make sense? I can't say about the Zoroastrians, because they were sun worshippers that were given the boot. Makes sense. Yes. You have to speak a little louder. See, so
the Brahma is there.
I've been in the Gurukul for a long time, so I should. But unfortunately, maybe I'm too old. I never learned mumble, so you have to speak up.
The Brahmavad is there on the spiritual platform or transcendental platform?
Spiritual. Transcendental means you're in a relationship with the Lord. So that means you're a devotee. The Brahmavadi doesn't mean you're a devotee. A devotee may be on the Brahman platform, but he's not a Brahmavadi. Vadi means your philosophy.
So the Mayavadi, they reach the platform of Brahmavadi?
In theory, yes, but I probably doubt any of them actually get liberated. I mean, they get liberated from their position on this planetary system and end up in hell. That they do. but I don't know that that's exactly what they're looking for. Right? Okay, so you're not becoming powerful by performing austerities. Right, because that whole potency and everything is coming from the Lord. So it's by His grace you followed His rules, so therefore you're getting that material benefit. Like that. Devotion is the highest goal. Right? So the point is of all the goals that are there, the highest goal is devotion to Lord Vishnu. Because you have a goal and then you get that, then there's another goal and another goal. So the final goal is devotion to the Lord. The hypocrites and cheaters sometimes advertise themselves as incarnations and thus increase their pride. Devotees should cautiously avoid the company. As stated in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Adi 14:82-83. Sometimes a group of evil persons would try to mislead people in general from the spiritual path with wrong advice. These sinners simply cheat people in order to fulfill their bellies by claiming to be Lord Ram. Right? So they would claim to be an incarnation, you know, whichever one that they were into, like that. And they, the common person, are very simple. They accept, you know, they don't know. So then, you know, they would therefore, you know, give themselves facility and create a lot of false ego. Devotees should constantly take shelter of the holy names while passing their lives without duplicity or sin. There's no greater religious principle than this. The Chaitanya Bhagavat, Adi 14, 139, 40, gives the following conclusion. Therefore, in Kali Yuga, chanting the holy name is the essential religious principle. No other religious practice can help one cross the material ocean of nescience. Even the Vedas are unable to sufficiently glorify one who chants the Lord's holy name day and night in all situations. So being absorbed in the holy name, because duplicity and sin, that's going to distract from the chanting. Like that. So one who's absorbed in the holy name, then that is the highest religious principle. Right? So the point is not someone who's without duplicity or sin, that's the highest. No, it's the one who's constantly takes shelter of the whole name. Right? And the secondary, the form of it, is without duplicity or sin. Okay. Human beings should worship Krishna by considering the natural qualities and accepting the livelihoods of their previous and latter mahajans. Natural qualities means their own qualities. Means what it is that you have. What can you bring to the table? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah. You know, so it's like you have intelligence, then you use, that's the natural quality you use as a livelihood. Or you're clever, you use that. Or you have a particular skill, you use that. Or does that make sense? So that would be the natural quality. And then also, accordingly, is what is there. Is that, you know, you look at it from an economic point of view or from an administrative point of view or, you know, a Shastric point of view or artistic point of view. Any of these also. Because you may be intelligent, but you see it from an economic point of view, so you would apply in business. Right, you know, you see it from administrative, so you apply it. Does that make sense? So it's just your own conditioned nature, and accepting the livelihoods of the previous and latter mahajans, how they took up their life in the material environment, you know, to maintain themselves as devotees. So you see how they, you know, work and then function like that. That makes sense. So what lifestyle is led by the great personalities, either in the past or you know, or latter, meaning what's present now, right? I don't think they were meaning the guys in the, how you say, where is it? Can't remember. Utah. Yeah, I don't think it's meaning that.
Utah?
Normal?
The latter day Mahajans. The LDMs, right?
I don't get it.
You don't get it?
No.
The latter day saints? The Mormons.
Oh, I don't know.
The Mormons.
Okay, the Mormons, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so
yeah. That's fun.
Pure devotional service is proportionally enhanced by following a proper occupation. Otherwise, it is never achieved. Right? So he's making a general rule here, is pure devotional service proportion to following a proper occupation. Mm. If you don't follow proper, you're not actually engaging body, mind, and words. Because if you're doing what you naturally do, then body, mind, and words, you can absorb yourself. But if you're doing something that's not natural for you, even though you're good at it, it won't absorb body, mind, and words. Because your reason for doing it is something other than the natural nature of that occupation. Does that make sense? You know, let's say administration is for the purpose of protection of the people in general. But you don't trust the other administrators. So you want to do it yourself. But your only purpose in being in administration is for your own security.
Mm.
So that's the wrong mentality.
Mm.
So then your absorption in that administration won't be engaging body, mind, and words in the Lord's service, because it's not, administration is not meant to exclusively take care of yourself. You would be taken care of, because if you're not taken care of, how do you administrate? But its main focus would be on how you're going to protect others. So you're not going to actually be focused on that. So you're not fully engaging that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that... Yeah? And also an occupation, it can mean engagement also. So that means your sadhana and anything. You know, I mean, traditionally the word occupation is simply an engagement, right? So then, you know, your sadhana is proper, your dealings with the family is proper, what duties you have there. So in other words, it's your whole lifestyle. If it's not proper for your situation, for your natural qualities, then it'll be a difficulty. Right? You know, if a brahmachari should be a grihastha, you shouldn't be a grihastha. You know, like that. Does that make sense? So then you situate yourself accordingly, then you'll be properly engaged. You know, otherwise, there's too much distraction. Otherwise, it doesn't come to pure devotion. Because if you're not doing your occupation, then you're doing it for yourself and not doing it for Krishna. Right? Some sense. That's different from emergency.
Yeah.
That would be emergency situation. Okay, you're not the temple manager, don't want to be the temple manager, never wanted to be the temple manager. But something happened that, you know, for a few months you have to be the temple manager until it works out, and then like that, it's an emergency. You know? Does that make sense? You know, you're not the pujari, but you end up doing the puja. You're not the cook, you end up doing the cook. Or you're not the pot washer, so you end up being the pot washer. You know, like that. It just, those are emergencies, so that always overrides. But you always want to be careful that how different it is from the nature is how long one should do it. Does that make sense? You know, so someone can do it. Some can do it for a shorter time, some for a longer time. So one always has to be very careful with that. But it's not something like, well, it's not my nature to wash pots, and so therefore I can't do this for more than 10 minutes. You know, that's not what we're talking about here.
I was a Sydney Temple president for 24 hours.
24 hours?
Continue.
No, there was 5 minutes in 81, and then there was another 2 hours and 35 minutes in 81.
And then vice president also on the books for 10 years, but that was in theory. It wasn't much practice.
So for the 24 hours, you were the temple president, but you were actually the vice president. And
no.
For the 10 years, you were supposedly the vice president, but you were doing all the duties of the president.
No, it's like downwards.
Okay. That's funny. Yeah, like that. So, you know, one does whatever. So the 24 hours was during the Sunday when the AFL was on or something. you were the only one that agreed to stay at the temple, and that's why you say on the books only, because...
No, it was on the books. It was voted in by the zonal council.
That's what I'm saying, for that Sunday that they'd all be busy. So.
Okay.
What they forgot is there was a television in the president's office. But there was no problem, because the rest of the country was watching AFL, so nothing went wrong. So it was a perfect presidency.
You didn't have the other teams near the president's office.
That's true. That's right. Okay. That was the next president. Okay. So 46. Srila Prabhupada describes sato vritte as follows. We'll go back and we will look. Sato vritte. This is a very long section, isn't it? Ah, okay. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda's essay, Satovritte, following the footsteps of the previous acharyas. So that's why he ended with that, is that following the livelihoods, you know, in that of the previous and latter Mahajans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Devotional service means transcendental activities. On the transcendental platform, there is no contamination by the three modes of material nature. This is called Vishuddha Sattva, the platform of pure goodness. Or goodness free from contamination by the qualities of passion and ignorance. So that's what pure goodness is. It's the same platform, but goodness, there's a contamination of passion and ignorance. It may be minor compared to the volume of goodness, but still it's there. So pure goodness means there is no contamination. So it'll be on the transcendental platform. In this Krishna consciousness movement, we require everyone to rise early in the morning, by 4 a.m., and attend Mangalarti, or morning worship. Then read Srimad Bhagavatam, perform kirtan, and so forth. Thus we hold continuous activities in devotional service, 24 hours daily. This is called Satovritti, or following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, who expertly filled every moment of time with Krishna conscious activities. So these are the acharyas have established this because this is what they do, this is what others have done, and this is what works. It keeps you busy. Like that. Does that make sense? Otherwise, then it doesn't. How are you going to, you know, the idea is that we don't make it up.
Mm.
We follow in their footsteps of what they do. Like Prabhupada's morning program, as far as a complete Pancharatrik program, I don't think anybody has as complete a program. Like that. You know, it's just so clear and obvious. Others will do all these different aspects, but it's not necessarily as regulated into a program as Prabhupada's done. Yeah.
What was your Bhaktisiddhanta
Saraswati? Basically the same. But I would say they didn't have the Guru Puja as a regular element. The Mangalarti, the Tulsi Puja is there. They would have some discussion on means. It would be happening because you're preaching, so there's always discussion going on. But whether they had a fixed class, evening Tulsi Arthik, I don't think is there. But it's basically the same. But they would do. Sometimes they do more bhajans and stuff like that, but then sometimes, except for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they do less discussions. Like that. So it would be quite individual. It means if they had a situation where they're discussing things, then they could talk for a long time. You know? But,
So Srila Prabhupada took it from Srila
Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati? Yeah, like that. But then, you know, seeing that all the elements of the Pancharatra were brought out, the Darshan Arti, the circumambulating, the deity, the Charyamrita, all these things, these are all part of the 16th item and the 16 items of the Pancharatra system. You know, waking in the morning, you know, dressing, chilak, neck beads, the thread, the going to the temple, ringing the bell, offering obeisances, that's all abhidhamma. So your first part and your last part, everybody is nicely engaged in. And then the middle, depending upon what's... The principal elements are all there. You know, the artik and worship of the spiritual master. But then when you have the panchanga, then the fifth point is that chanting of japa, hearing Bhagavatam, serving guests, associating with devotees, worshipping Tulsi, worshipping the Dham. Those are all integrated very well. So it's the most, I'd say, naturally integrated program. Okay. You know.
In South India, there is a Pancharatra?
Yes. But we're saying is that they have, but it's not that The worship will be regulated, but what each person does in their day-to-day life, that will vary. You know, basic things will be there. So they have the aspects, but to bring everything out very nicely, it's not necessarily as strong. You know, because certain things are written in. If you're doing deity worship, you have to worship the spiritual master. So if you do deity worship every day, then you don't have to have a separate guru puja. Right? But if you're going to involve those that aren't themselves sitting down and doing the worship, you know, the full worship, then you would need to have a situation in which they can worship the spiritual master. Does that make sense? So like that. You just, in other words, they would know about these things, so they'd work them into their lives, but it's they as an individual knowing what should be done is doing it. But here, it's the temple program, it's already fixed, so whether you understand it or not, it's still there, so you get the benefit. Srila Prabhupada concludes his purport on the six items favorable for executing devotional service as follows. Since all the devotees of the Lord are under the protection of a supreme potency, they should not deviate from the path of devotional service and take to the path of the karmi, the jnani, or yogi. This is called utsahan, nishchayadharyat tat tat karma pravartanat, enthusiastically executing the regulative activities of devotional service with patience and confidence. In this way, one can advance in devotional service without hindrance. Right, so everything is, we can see, is nicely contained in that sentence. Right? Enthusiastically, so that means we're using intelligence, making an endeavor with intelligence, like that, so you're able to tell what's what. Executing the regulative activities of devotional service. Now, the regulative activities, those are then what is established by the authorities, like that. And that will be also according to the nature and patience and confidence. That confidence means there's no doubts, so that means you know the philosophy. Patience, you have character. So with you know, properly understanding the philosophy, so there's no doubts, with proper personal character, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, you intelligently apply yourself according to your nature in devotional service. Does that make sense? So that summed up everything that Bhaktivinoda Thakura was explaining in detail, you know, over 10 pages. Does that make sense? So that's what we mean by when Prabhupada said everything's in the books. It's meant. You know, so the study of these other books are so you appreciate what's already here. And so then from reading Prabhupada's books, you can see what that means. So each word has a meaning, or each phrase has so much import. And then that can be addressed for one's own understanding or for explaining to others. Does that make sense? So for us, it's not, we're studying Srila Prabhupada's books and Bhaktivinoda and this and that, and it's all cool. Like that. No, so we're studying Prabhupada's books and studying the works of the acharyas so that we understand the detail that Prabhupada's talking about. Because he will present it in very pleasant language or easily approachable language. While the acharyas may use, you know, very specific technical language and go through it in a particular way so that you get the point. Does that make sense? If we talk about buddhi yoga, right, then someone who knows the details of karma, jnana, and jnana yogas understands they say buddhi yoga. But someone who doesn't would think, you know, the karma, jnana, and jnana, there's so much more detail, so therefore that's the higher understanding. No, the understanding buddhi yoga is the higher understanding. Because you're able to combine them all and function with them all at once. That's the higher understanding. Does that make sense? Yes?
So Buddha Yoga, somebody wants to contemplate that, then they have to contemplate the elements of it.
Yeah, they'd have to contemplate. So what, in other words, in Buddha Yoga, the practice, which element is, you know, the prominent that would be the aspect you would contemplate? You know, is it connected with the activities and connected with the understanding, connected with the absorption of the mind? So in other words, body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service. That's Buddha Yoga. So it's made up of body, meaning karma yoga, you know, mind, meaning jnana yoga, and how you say, and words, meaning the intelligence or the jnana yoga. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then it's just all of those are combined together because there's situations where karma is more prominent or jnana is more prominent or jnana is more prominent. And it may be in one's life that there are stages that one goes through, or in different devotees, there's a prominence. So unless one understands all three, one won't understand how that applies. Does that make sense?
Could you say, in contrast to that, somebody who claims to be a karma yogi, they will limit themselves within that field?
Yeah, generally they have the other aspects are there. They just translate everything into karma. You know, because we're karma yogis, because we engage in practical endeavor. But you know, they study so that they understand what the practical endeavor is. There's always some meditation so that they have the right mood and stuff like that. But the focus will be on the activity. So, but for us, but then they'll be like that and they'll remain like that. So then later on, then they'll become not satisfied. Right? But for us, is that Buddha Yoga already includes you can use it as a prominence of karma or a prominence of jnana or a prominence of a combination or a prominence of jnana. It doesn't matter. Because all of them are there. Whatever's the situation and the need, then it's applied.
Yeah. And then buddhi and bhakti, they're not exactly synonymous?
No, buddhi means the yoga of intelligence. Mm-hmm. But then we're not meaning jnana, we're using being intelligent, and whatever is useful and necessary, that's what's applied. Yeah.
So Ayurveda is also a type of yoga. And does that kind of come in under karma yoga? Or
yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Any of those kind of things would come under karma yoga. Though there are sections that will deal with the jnana and everything. Most devotees don't know that. But psychology is dealt with, and the intelligence is dealt with, all those things are dealt with. Because it's a balance between mucus, bile, and air. So that means it's a balance between earth, you know, the earth, the water, and fire. Earth, fire, and air. Water, fire, and air. Because these things are mixed, you know, and things. So mucus means it's water and earth. You know, so fire is it will have fire and earth in it. Mm-hmm. And air will have ether, and I forget what's the other. Maybe it's earth or something. And so all these different aspects are there. Just like it means ether is one of the things. So if there's not enough space, then there won't be the proper health. Mm-hmm. So that's why you see is that. You know, there's a difference in those who live out, you know, like in the country where it's all open. They have a different kind of mentality than those who live in the city, especially as the facilities in the city get smaller and smaller. You know, because the ether element is lacking. Mm. So it will have an effect on the mental health, because the subtle body has ether in it. Mm. Or the gross body has air. Like that, you know, it's the prominent elements. I think water, fire, and air is the body. And then, you know, water, fire, and ether is the subtle body. You know what I'm saying? So, mucus, bile, and air, they connect with body, mind, and intelligence. So unless those all are healthy and balanced, then it won't be. So the Ayurveda deals with that, but most only take it just what deals with the body. Most don't take it with the other. Because putting it in the context of the modern medicine, then you're only taking the body.
Yeah.
You know, and they know a few things psychological, they've learned a little bit, you know. Like if they have family around, then they'll do better than those who don't have family around, and you know, certain things like that. But it's, for them, it's just a trick, you know.
And they send in the hospital clown.
Yes.
It's something they do a lot in Denmark. Every hospital has a clown that goes around and cheers off the patients.
Really?
Yeah.
The hospital clown.
It actually works. It's probably because their life's pretty miserable.
Well, I think that's one of the places where they are in small little boxes and stuff like that. like a, there's one person that had a room. It was as big as just, you know, between this column and here. And, you know, they would consider it kind of a small room and have trouble how to put things and where to put everything like that. Then this devotee from Holland came, and he was working on the samadhi, so he stayed for some years. So then he got that room. He divided it into two rooms. So one room was the you know, where the bed was. And one was where all the stuff was kept, you know, like the walk-in wardrobe or something, you know. So, you know, walk-in wardrobe is quite, you know, considered quite, you know, a fancy thing. But, you know, it's within a room that's, you know, like that. So it was just wall to wall, I mean, from floor to ceiling cabinets, you know, in both rooms. And enough space to walk and enough for a bed and enough in the other one that you could stand and get into all the closets. So the floor space that was left would have been, you know, maybe, you know, 20%. But when you looked at it, it seemed, it had so much stuff because you could do so much with it. It had that feeling that it was big, but it was actually two rooms out of this one small room.
It's a big thing in Japan because the area prices are so high in the cities that there are architects that specialize in making these type of apartments where the bathrooms close and become the kitchen and like completely crazy.
Yeah, the toilet becomes the washing machine.
Yeah.
Have you seen the hotels?
No, yeah, well, like,
Like it's what, 3 foot by 3 foot by 6 foot.
Yeah, exactly. Like morgues.
Yeah, yeah, but they will only let the Japanese stay. Foreigners can't use them because they go crazy.
Yeah.
The Japs, it's just normal. It's just like, you know, it's like three of them high, you know, you got a ladder, it's like a bunch of bees or something. You know, it's air conditioned, you have your television, you have everything. You know, so that's cool.
So Maharaj, for the people who live in the city, they can basically apply Ayurveda by working their butts off for 6 months and coming to the Holy Dharma for 6 months.
Yeah, no, that's right. Then you have the space. So you add the ether element, but later. You know, it's just like, you know, holding your breath or something. You know, so, you know, it works. You know, so. Yeah. So like that. That's one solution. Prabhupada would do that. Spend 6 months in the West and 6 months in India. So it works. But just don't forget to bring your butt with you because you need it to sit on. Okay.
Tomorrow we do Gita, Gita.
Yes. Gita, Gita, and more Gita. So now it'll pick up. Yeah, it will be quite good. Yeah. What are we on? We're on 40.
Yeah. Out of 100?
Yeah.
And you said...
But one will notice... Well, it depends, actually. It means that there's a... I see. In the morning, we get distracted by questions, certain kind of questions. But in this class, also, we get distracted by questions. The difference is there's the depth of the distraction here. Like, what was it? Friday, when we were discussing about what happens in God exactly in there. You know, there's this, you know, like this, and so most don't get that far. So.
The day of the misgivings.
Yeah.
Yeah, misgiving day, not Thanksgiving. Misgiving day.
Misgiving day. Yeah, so hopefully that'll go. Because it goes, and I think the next one is two parts, but I think it's only as big as this.
Mm.
I'm not sure, and the last part's very small, so it might even be so small that it may be integrated into the second part.
I think
he's
supposed to finish by May.
No, the ideal is we finish by February, this, and then in April, May, then we deal with the Bhakti Anucana. Because I thought about that, the easiest thing is just take it right straight through and like that, and then. But then the problem is then visa-wise, and this and that is hard for us to do. So we just have a different subject at that time. The idea is to finish in as close around Vasant Panchami as possible. But no guarantees. But we have a 2-3 week kind of buffer there. That if we finish, then we do something else. And if we haven't finished, we can do this. Because during the festival, the devotees just show up, but it just means more distracting questions. That's kind of, it gets interesting, adding a little bit of a political flavor to something like that. Generally, it's always politics and money, so you don't have to worry that it's going to be something else.
quite significant last year.
Yeah. It's always like that, actually. Okay, so then we'll see you all tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki,
Jainatai
Gaudapaya.
Much thank you very much for the very in-depth and enlightening presentation on the connected instructions.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. This runs is two, but the thing is because I think because the Gita was late, so we started with the morning one is the Tattva Mandala, the Gita and Upanishad, and the second one is the Bhakti Mandala, which is the Nectar Devotion, the Upadesha Rita. So one is dealing with the Sambandhi Gyan, the other is dealing with the Abhideya, like that. So it has something very nice on how it's practiced. The other one is the need to practice and the knowledge necessary to practice, like that. The flavors are very different. But we'll find that will also... Bhagavatam has them both, but in different parts of the Bhagavatam, one will be emphasized over the other. But generally, the depends on... the first course of the Bhagavatam, then the side ones will basically all be Abhideya. Like that. But in the second course, there'll be both a lot of tattva like that, because then enough is known the philosophy to get down to real fine points.
Second part means cantos or day, part of the day classes?
No, second part means from year 7 to 9. First part means from 4 to 6. Parts of the day will be the same. It'll be like this. It means one will be the morning would be the Bhagavatam, and then this time would be the whatever the other literatures. Like that. So throwing that. Same with Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Chaitanya Charitamrita and then whatever the other literatures. So it's always has those two of you. Yeah, like that. Or supportive literatures in it, depends. Because it's like Bhagavatam, it has both together. The Gita specifically giving the basics of the philosophy, the fundamentals. The Nectar Devotion and the Upadeshamrita are giving the essentials of the devotional process. But what I mean is there's always the primary element and then the supporting.
All right.
To the Prabhupada keys.